D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick here on this Thursday, high noon, a high hot noon here in Nashville. Adam Vingan finishing up his vacation. He will be back with us on Monday. Willie Donick, Derek Mason here with you. We're broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. We're just checking on this last day of July, now that training camp is in a little bit of a lull, going back on the big decision that the Titans passed on to take Cam Ward. We are not saying the verdict is in. Cam Ward is the right choice or Cam Ward is the wrong choice. We're simply asking, how do you feel about it right now? And just reminding everybody what it is that they passed on, which was, according to Paul Kuharsky, the following on draft day. The third overall pick, moving down two spots. Presumably, you could have taken Abdul Carter. That's who the Giants used. The 34th overall pick this past year, earlier this summer, you would have another player on your team right now, a second-round pick. Could have been a wide receiver. Could have been another edge rusher. Could have, whatever you want to do with that. Plus, next year's first-round pick of the Giants. Are the Giants going to be good this year? How high could that pick be? And the Giants' second-round pick next year. That's what they passed on to take Cam Ward. But they had the conviction. They fell in love with Cam Ward. They said, this is our guy. Lewis Riddick says, thumbs up. It would have taken a lot more for him to do it. He said he would have paused, but he would have made the pick for Cam Ward. D-Mace, you're still in that camp.
I'm still in the camp.
You're still in the camp for Cam.
I'm not going anywhere. I'm locked down. I'm good.
You're
I put cement around the edges, so you can't pull it up.
Cement.
Yeah,
okay.
Cement.
So it's hard.
I say cement, you say cement.
Potato, potato. Yeah. So
yeah, I'm dug in, Willie.
So we got a lot of reaction to this. We have one guy on our text line, driven by Wilson County.
Oh, my goodness. I'm laughing at David. Because I'm from the north, so I say cement. I guess. Yeah, but look, Willie's from sort of kind of the north, too, in a sense.
Listen, you,
but I say
you,
cement.
You Midwesterners, man. You just need it.
Y'all pronounce it cement.
Yeah, cement.
What are you menting?
So here we have several texts. I'm going to get as many as I can here. You can call as well, 615-737-1025. I think to even question this was a mistake after two real practices is insane. And just get another sign of the times, or just another sign of the times. Manning threw the most interceptions in his first year. Josh Allen threw to the defense more than the offense. I think his mentality was what sold him to the Titans. Yes, we know that. And I am not saying they've made a mistake. I'm looking at the percentages, and I'm bringing back to the table what the studies have shown. And I have absolutely stuck by this even the year before they had the first pick, that Thaler and Massey, my guys, that I've never met.
I told you,
one of them won a Pulitzer Prize,
man.
But the study shows over time that your percentages of trading down from the number one spot are going to pay dividends. John Robinson did it, and I think it worked well. Now, he already had the quarterback for sure, but let's get a couple other text in there, and then we're going to play you the clip. This is of Callahan the day after the draft. Jeff, Jackson Dart and another first and a couple of seconds were pretty appealing. Ward wasn't the only unproven quarterback in the draft. Everybody's unproven when you draft them. I don't even think they would have taken Jackson Dart.
No.
That wouldn't have been what I would have done. I would have taken the best players at the different spots where they have too many holes to plug. There's only one way to build a winner, and that is by drafting, and drafting well, something the Titans have not done very well. With this, he goes on to say this, with all of Willie's comments on overall number one pick, I remember hearing these same intelligent points before the draft. However, as Stephen A. Smith says, everyone was infected with QB fever again in Nashville. Cam Ward will get better and will likely be a good NFL quarterback. But the real pressure will be on those in on the decision to draft him rather than Ward himself. They will be the ones paying the price with their jobs, and they should be betting the exacta. Amy Adams Strunk has much on the line as well, with longer and riskier Titans future on the line if Ward does not play extremely well or gets injured in a rebuilding year when they had the opportunity to improve this team faster at many positions. So I think what I'm hearing is Jeff is on my end of the ledger.
I think he's on your side.
I'm trying to find the one that really just gave me the business. He said, well, you give the kid a chance.
I don't think, I don't think Willie's not giving him a chance, but he's bringing the other side of the coin. Like, now that everybody's in camp, and I understand that, listen, a lot of this, you know, it's one day he's playing great, the next day he's not. So it's going to be this yo-yo with both he and Carter. But he's trying to explain, now that these guys are in camp, now that we've heard what is going on with the Giants and Abdul Carter, and we know what's going on here in Nashville with Cam Ward, not to say that we're projecting that he will be a bust or anything, but just kind of going back on and saying, you know what, let's revisit this. Would you still, knowing what you know, seeing what you have seen, you know, reading what you've read, would you still make the pick, or would you go the route of Willie and, you know, basically fleecing the Giants for this year's draft picks as well as next year? So not to say that we're saying or Willie saying that Cam would be a bust.
Right. No, I'm not saying
thinking
that.
About it.
I'm just saying that it's all on him. When you take all these other picks, mm-hmm. you have a lot. You don't have to hit on every one of them to have move the ball forward in your ability to get the roster. At some point, you'd have to get the quarterback. I do realize that, and that's not easy. And that was Lewis Riddick, one of his points. He says, you don't know how Arch Manning and all these guys who everybody's saying, hey, next year's quarterback class. You want next year's quarterback class. We don't really know how that's going to play out or not. I do understand that, and I believe that. But I like to play the percentages. G from Murfreesboro is on the other end of it. Willie. Remember, this is a quarterback's league. If you think you got the guy, I don't care what's offered. You take him. D-Mace, stand strong.
I am, man. I'm
also, Willie,
strong.
Who's to say the first and second round picks this year and next year will pan out also? But I've got a lot of chances to get right.
And you got more chances to get wrong.
You play the roulette board in Vegas, which I don't. Because it's been proven, if you play the roulette board long enough, you will lose. But I got a better chance if I got my chips. If I got free chips, I got 4 or 5 chances to win rather than 1 chance. That's the principle I'm using here. But G disagrees. He said, does everyone remember when Donick wanted to keep rolling it back with the Predators years ago? And that would have ended up being a disaster. Okay, G.
I guess G's feeling a certain way.
And he said there's a reason why the Giants were willing to give all these picks away. They think that quarterback is special like the Titans do. Mm-hmm. Okay, and that's fair. Now, you know who else agrees with G? Brian Callahan. Now, this is what he said the day after the draft. Now, pay attention, because I went nuts when he said this.
The offer that the Giants made sounded pretty hefty. Mm-hmm. When did that come? Along the timeline, and was there a temptation at that time?
Yeah, I think we went through the process the correct way. You know, we considered all things available to us. You know, as far as when and where and how much, that doesn't really matter now at this point. But those conversations, those offers, we did our due diligence, and ultimately we just felt like Cam is a player that we weren't going to let go anywhere else except here to Tennessee. So. We arrived at that consensus. It took a lot of work to get there, and I don't think at any point since we made that decision, there's really wasn't any conversations past that. You know, I said it before that I think when you have an opportunity to add a caliber of quarterback like Cam, those things are priceless. There's no price you put on that from draft capital standpoint, because those players end up being what you think they're capable of. Those picks don't matter when it comes to, you know, future picks and draft capital, because he's got the ability to be a really fantastic quarterback.
Okay. Priceless. And that lays out perfectly what their thinking was. They were all in lockstep. They all believe in Cam Ward. But you can't know. You can't know. And something that has been brought up many times, he was not in the caliber of prospect by the consensus evaluation by many. And you have to be willing to say, as you're the Titans, everybody else was wrong. But he was not a Joe Burrow or Peyton Manning or Andrew Luck. You know, there are certain guys that are considered, hey, this is the one. What? This is clearly the best prospect in the draft, and he plays quarterback. Cam Ward was not.
But and this is where it does make it interesting with what I'm going to say. It does make sort of football interesting and fun, that comparison. But I think it's unfair to compare one quarterback class to the next quarterback class, because Cam Ward didn't come out last year. He wasn't in the, okay, I'm getting ready, I'm being evaluated,
right.
I'm getting ready.
I'm not even worried about that. I'm looking at this year's class, and people had Travis Hunter, they had Abdul Carter, and a few others rated ahead of
Ward
as a prospect.
Yes, but it all depends on, yeah, you may be ranked ahead of me, but it's what do they need right now?
Oh, yeah.
You know, because there are only two teams in the top, you know, four or five that needed quarterback, and that was the Titans and the Giants. Everybody else had their quarterback per se. They weren't looking to get a quarterback. Now, there were some teams below that, 7, 8, 9, 10, even a little bit, that wanted quarterbacks, but they were not going to give up what they needed to give up to get up to that spot. But just because he wasn't evaluated on the same level as Travis Henry and Abdul Carter doesn't nullify him as a quarterback. He was the top ranked quarterback out there this year, and he would have still been a high first round pick. He still would have been a top 10 pick had they passed him on and say just took Travis Hunter or Abdul Carter. The Giants would have taken Cam Ward. So he still essentially would have been a top five pick. Mm-hmm. So I feel good that the guy that I'm drafting, now that I'm looking at it, because before I didn't really care. You know, I'm drafting him. I don't care if you would have drafted him or not. But hindsight is 20/20. Yeah, I'm not the only person that wanted him. There were other teams that wanted him, but no one wanted to. There was one team willing to move up to get him, but other teams would have taken him and would have been satisfied with getting him.
Yeah, and with Travis Hunter, we know the Jaguars gave up a lot
exactly
to take him. So there's a lot riding on whether Travis
absolutely
Hunter does well.
And Travis is,
but that's why I'd rather be the team taking the extra ways to go about it. I want the extra picks. That is the time tested measure of success that has been, I don't want to say proven, but the statistically shown.
Uh-huh.
Your probability is better by trading down and getting extra picks. Who is this? Text. I would have taken the trade. The roster is in shambles. Even the brass knows it. We need more players and not projects like Femi, too. Talking about Oladejo.
Okay, so
who, by the way, he's impressive.
Yes.
When you watch him walk around the field,
uh-huh.
He's got, I can see why people are like, wow, look at this guy. He stands out with his physique, et cetera. You have to be a good football player as well.
So, okay.
I don't know how that's going to work.
Yeah, and I'm hoping it works out well. A buddy of mine, you know, texts me today and says, you know, he's from UCLA. Well, he went to UCLA. How's Femi's doing? I'm like, you know, he has a chance to start. He's doing well. They have high hopes for him, and rightfully so. But, I mean, who's to say that, okay, if you'd have taken those picks, who's to say that you try to get your quarterback next year and he fails? Or who's to say that, okay, we took Cam this year because our roster isn't as good, we're still going to have a top 10 pick or a top 7 pick. So we can essentially still get an elite player next year, all while having a quarterback now. Or we can say we're a top 3 pick. Okay, we want to trade out of this. We still can get a team that may be looking to get a quarterback now. So essentially, you may end up getting that same deal that you got that the Giants presented last year. You may end up getting that same deal or even slightly more this year if you end up with a top three pick.
That is probably what their answer would be as well. Is if Ward is good, mm-hmm. you could take your that now. How good?
Yeah.
I don't know. But if they have a top 10 pick and there are good quarterbacks out there, they might be able to wheel and deal and get extra picks that they would have gotten from the Giants last year.
Now you become.
But I think you would still have that. You would see, because they would have been poor this year probably because they wouldn't have the quarterback.
But who's to say that?
So you'd have two firsts and two seconds that then you could turn into more or move up or down to get the quarterback.
But again,
I still think you have more capital in the bank. Already.
Yeah, I get it, but
you just don't have the quarterback.
But who's to say that next year's crop? Again, you're
we don't know. There's no guarantee for any quarterback.
You're basically rolling the dice at the table and saying, "All right, we gonna bypass this one, and we hoping that this next quarterback crop is all right." So you roll the dice. You either gonna crap out or you gonna roll sevens or elevens. Which one are you gonna hit your number? I get because you have more chances at the roll. You may end up getting more good players, but also you may end up going broke too, you know, end up on a 30 for 30. And how you chose to, you know, bypass this quarterback, Cam Ward, to get all these picks, and now look where you are as a franchise. I mean, we've seen franchises like that where they spent all the money on a quarterback trying to get him or didn't and wanted the picks. And they end up on a 30 for 30 because their team has been in a rut for, you know, X amount of years.
Another texter texts, every level, Cam has gotten better. Give him time. If he came in lighting it up in camp, I would have been skeptical of the defense. I would have brought this up even if Cam was lighting it up. I don't think it's a factor right now where Cam is, but I think it's a good time just to revisit what they had in front of him and ask yourself as you look at the entire roster, mm-hmm. what was the better play? And did their emotions get the best of them by putting all of their eggs on Cam Ward? Because there is so much riding simply on whether he is the man or not. You'd have had different ways to go about it. When we come back, we're going to play you a couple of clips from John Robinson's discussion with Chase and Big Joe. It was quite interesting. And we'll go back on some of the decisions he had to make as a GM, including the trade of A.J. Brown. That's coming up next here on DVD 102.5 The Game.
Well, I'll start with a simple question. You know, we're sitting here today having this conversation. You've had a lot of time to reflect the last couple years and everything. You know, why do you think that we're sitting here today and that you're not at training camp?
I guess probably if I could have bought some mulligans, you know, like before the golf tournament, you know, you can pay for those mulligans. I probably would have bought a handful of those. You know, I think at the end of the day, let me first lead off with I'm extremely appreciative of Amy, of Kenneth, of Barkley, of the Adams family for taking a chance on a hayseed from West Tennessee and giving me an opportunity to do what – that's not the ambulance coming for me. By the way, guys.
Not yet.
Not yet, yeah.
Why is that ambulance two-tone blue? Like, yeah. What is that?
But I'm extreme. I mean, they certainly changed my life and my family's life for the opportunity. But you know, at the end of the day, I was charged with managing decisions as it related to on the field stuff, and I didn't do my job well enough at times, and that's what happens. And again, certainly some things I would love to have back. A lot of things that I'm extremely proud of that we were able to do in my time there. But that's the way it goes, you know. There's only one perfect man that ever walked this earth, and none of us will ever be that. But our purpose is to strive to be like him as much as we can.
That was John Robinson, the former Titans GM, talking with Chase and Big Joe, a long sit-down conversation. We're going to go back through some highlights and hit on some of the big decisions. We just got done with several segments of probably the biggest decision that Mike Borgonzi is going to make. It's going to define how things go. And that is Cam Ward going to be worthy of the first overall pick? Because we know for a fact that he had the option of doing what John Robinson did when he first became the GM, and that was take the number one overall pick and trade down for the different assets he got with the Rams. And we do always point out when we make that comparison that John Robinson came in already having Marcus Mariota as the quarterback. So he was not in search for the quarterback. So that does make it different. But I think John Robinson gave himself some good runway and some good ability to build by making that trade. So here's a guy, you know, that's been through it. Mm-hmm. We have gone back and forth with all of the decisions that he made, the big ones. I think he made more good decisions than poor decisions. His winning percentage was very good. But just like a lot of GMs, your time comes and goes. So I thought that was interesting perspective from him.
Yeah, I think it was. You know, the way he came into the NFL, at least not in the NFL, but I'm talking about the Titans, under the circumstances, he came into it in a way that not many GMs come. He came into a situation where this team had already went to the playoffs. They were a year removed from the playoffs. The previous season, they were in the playoffs, and they won a game inside the playoffs. So he wasn't coming to a team that was depleted of good players to potential stars. He had those guys. So when you talk about, you know, making that decision as the when you're the top team in a draft, well, a lot of it depends on how your roster looks. And, you know, do you come in with success or do you not come in with success? And his roster, and then they drafted Marcus. And Marcus, you know, Marcus was not great, but Marcus had his moments.
Right. And Marcus was drafted by the previous GM.
Yeah, so
Rustin Webster. Rustin,
yeah. But he came in, and Marcus was sort of established in a sense.
I think, like, he's shown enough.
Yeah, he had shown enough. Year, so, like, so they didn't have to spend the first pick on the quarterback. So they were able to, you know, like you said, accumulate those picks, help strengthen not only the top end but the bottom end of your roster. So he was able to benefit from that. And he had a good run of, what, 4 or 5 years. But because of the things, obviously, and we don't want to go back because it's not about the things he didn't do. But eventually it sort of wore thin. And then the next guy comes in and they got to deal with the same problem. So when you are in a position like this, it's about, again, how do we get to our destination the fastest? Is it by giving up on the first pick, taking the other picks and building it that way? Or is it by drafting a quarterback, believing what you've seen with your eyes and what you scouted and analytics, believing that he is our guy and we just need to build around him?
Now let's get to another major decision that he had to play, that he had a part in, and that was the trade of A.J. Brown. I think everybody listening to the interview was anxious to hear what he had to say about that. And do remember that John Robinson, he is doing media this year. He has been on some NFL Network broadcasts I've seen. He's going to be out there more, but he still is somewhat limited in what he can say because he's still under contract. And so there is an agreement, I think, that goes with that, with the he got fired, etc. But here's what he had to say about A.J. Brown and the decision to trade the talented wide receiver.
John, in the spring, you had a great 21 season. Go, you know, the number one seed. I know it hurts losing the Bengals. You go to the 22 season, you get word that A.J. Brown is going to ask for a new contract.
Here we go, Joe. Right out of the gate.
Sorry. Well, you knew. How did that start? And then the negotiation. And then once that happened, did you have to run it up the flagpole and say, look, we our receiver wants an extension. What do we do here?
I brought gauze and Band-Aids, so if you cut me off, I'll mend up. No, yeah, that's the that's a topic everybody probably is tuning in to hear about. And I can't as I would love to give in the details. I can't go into the details on it, but there was just a lot of discussion that went into that decision. Ultimately, it was my responsibility to make the decision, you know, and again, if I had one of those mulligans, I would probably do that. And that's nothing against Traylon or anybody else. But I think AJ's went on to have a great run. I'm proud of him. I'm proud of where he's at, mm-hmm. and what he's been able to accomplish. But sure, I mean, in hindsight, if you had a do-over, I mean, I'd be an idiot to sit here and say, no, I'd do it again. Like, no, you'd do it different. But we made the decision that we made, and then, you know, the rest is what it is.
When you say, if you can't talk about it, I understand it. When you say we, who is we?
Well, anytime you make a decision, right, it's collectively as an organization, there's a lot of people involved, right? It's not like – it's like when the offensive coordinator or the defensive coordinator, when they call a play on Sunday, it's not like they're shooting from the hip and they're like, I'm just going to run this play, even though you haven't practiced it, you haven't talked about it, you haven't watched it on film. Like, you go through every scenario with the organization, and it's the same thing in roster building. It's like you're going through, you know, your free agency stuff, you're going through trade proposals, you're going through draft prep. And you talk internally and you meet and, you know, you come up with scenarios. All right, we can do A, we can do B, we can do C. As a team, and I think I said this at the press conference after, you know, we made the move, it's like we collectively made a decision to do this, and that's what we did.
So that is the comments on AJ Brown. And you can tell that there are things he can't get into, but one thing that I think is pretty apparent is when you compare that to what Brian Callahan and Mike Borgonzi and Chad Brinker, they were all very, very sure that Cam Ward, it was the right decision to take him with the first pick. I think you could sense in John Robinson. Now, the complicated thing about A.J. Brown was the market was changing for wide receivers. He wanted to get a big, big raise. And philosophically, that was something they were going to have to tackle. They were going to have to tackle that. So when he was saying you can do A, you can do B, you can do C, I think, you know, you can go through what those would have been. A would have been, let's give him the money. B might have been, let's ride it out for another year. He's not happy, but he could still be on the team. We got a good team. Remember, they were just coming off of the number one seed.
Yeah.
And C was, let's see what we can get for him in a trade. You know, so those were the things that I'm sure they kicked around for a long time as AJ was doing his thing with, let's go public, let's go hit some baseballs over here, let's go make a little noise over there, let's make it clear that I'm a rising star and I'm going to get paid, even though here in Nashville, we were saying, yeah, he's really good, but, you know, he missed some games. He's, you know, his stats don't jump off the page at you. So it was, but there's no history is showing how big of a decision that was.
Of course. And now when you're sitting, you know, in that other seat watching it from, you know, 10,000 feet, you see that, oh, man, if I had an opportunity to do that over again, I think everybody.
He used the term mulligan.
Yeah,
right?
Everybody. It's no secret. It's not.
And
like,
it's easy now.
Exactly. It's not like you can go to, John and ask that question. He said, "Man, I think I would do it over." And then you go to Mike Vrabel, and he was like, "Nah, I think I would have stayed with doing that pick." No, everybody that was in that room, if you act, they would say, "No, I wouldn't make that. I wouldn't do that again." Because time has shown very quickly that wasn't the right move. And these are moves that are going to always be on your resume. And whether it's fair or not, because ultimately who has the decision to make the trade? but is always on the resume. And John even is sort of, he even alluded to it, like, it's my decision. I got to make it, and I got to own it. You know, we got to own it. We all got to own it. But more importantly, when they talk about that, they don't talk about, they say John Robinson. They mentioned John Robinson's name. Not, yeah, the Titans are in there, but John Robinson was the GM. And to everybody, it's like, he's the one that made the call.
He took ownership of that, but I think it's clear that everybody would love to know.
Like, what like,
what did Amy think? What did Mike Vrabel think? Mm-hmm. What, you know, you saw the body language of Mike Vrabel. We did see that. We couldn't hear what he was saying, but you could tell that he was troubled. So here's more on what John Robinson said today, looking back on the A.J. Brown trade.
Yeah, you know, and I think one of the worst things on draft night is the camera inside the office. I don't know why that's approved. I'd never have that happen.
Content, Joe. Everything's content, baby.
John, in the spring, you had a great 21 season. You know, the number one seed. I know it hurts losing the Bengals. You go to the 22 season, you get word that obviously we saw the reaction that Mike Vrabel had. How much discussion did you have with Mike about what was going down? How much discussion did – how much headway did Mike know that was happening draft night? Because his reaction, John, was really telling.
Yeah, again, I would just say we collectively we made the decision that we made. And that's a group decision.
Group.
Okay. So Joe was thinking the same thing we were.
Yeah.
What about the camera? Oh, my God. I think the answer tells you some things there.
Yeah.
Or the non-answer
and
tells
again,
you something.
He can't, you know, because if he answers that, then he's going to have to answer another question. He answered
right.
that. So he kind of leaves it vague. You know, it's like, hey, it's the decision
collective.
He made. Collective decision.
The collective is the fallback. Isn't it ironic that they're using the word collective when his successor, Rand Carthon, was lampooned all the time by talking about collaboration, a very similar word to collective decision.
But
right?
aren't you supposed to be
of course
collective in your decision?
You are supposed
regardless
to be.
Regardless of if you don't 100% love it, if you're a part of the team, it's like, okay, if this is the consensus, if this is the collective, then okay, I may not like it, but I'm falling in.
Joe Rex Rhodes is going to join us at the top of the hour. We'll see if he has some thoughts on this. And a couple other subjects. Looking forward to talking with Joe. We'll have more from the John Robinson interview, some other tidbits on his long discussion with Chase and Big Joe earlier today. You're listening to 102.5 The Game. Don't forget, 102.5 The Game at DVD. We're broadcasting live from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service.
I love offensive linemen in 18 and 19.
No.
I watched Isaiah Wilson at Georgia. I would have picked him in 2020. At what moment, John, did you think to yourself and maybe to Vrabel, like, we got a problem here with Isaiah Wilson? Did Sam Pittman lie to you? I don't say that as a joke because
he wants to fight Sam Pittman.
What the hell happened? And when did you realize we got a problem with Isaiah Wilson?
Yeah, Joe, again, you're wielding the knife again. I won't get into all the details on that one. Just say that that was a COVID year, right? Yeah. And I think that it got shut down on us in mid-March.
Right.
And it's not an excuse. At the end of the day, it's my job to pick the right guy. And we weren't able to kind of do our full process. To liken it to a T-ball game, like I don't even know if I hit the tee. You know, sometimes there's a T-ball game, the kids will swing and they'll hit the tee, and then the ball falls down. I don't even think I hit the tee on that one. So,
but he was great at Georgia. I watched him. I was like, I would have picked him. I think it was a great pick. What happened afterwards? That's why I would have never do your job. I'm not doing that. Can't. Is that one that keeps you up? Like what
that
the
was
hell?
That was a lot. There was stuff with that one that I can't get into details on. But yeah, it was. How do I frame this? I guess they have those dating apps now where they have the picture of somebody and you click on it. I've never been on one. I wouldn't know how to go on one. I don't want to go on one. I love my wife. And it's like I picked the dating app and I thought this was showing up and
the person didn't match the picture. It was kind of weird.
Yes. The wrong person showed up.
I don't know.
I'm not saying you still talk to him, but is it one of those?
No.
Do you still talk? No. Do you still? No.
Boy, it was like pulling teeth to get him to, and I understand why, but he was trying to give you the answer without giving you the answer. Again, this was one of those deals where I think there were a few teams probably, you know, during that time drafted a guy, whether it be in the first round or the fourth round. And they thought, man, you know, if I had just a little bit more time to truly evaluate this player or they would have played the whole season, I would have gotten a better, you know, sense of who this person was or who this person is. So I'm sure, you know, John is not the only guy, but because, you know, sort of, you know, the way he lost his job and sort of the reasons, you know, some believe why, you highlight stuff like this, you know, the missed picks with Isaiah, you know, and Caleb, and, you know, you go down a list of guys that right. didn't work out, but then there were guys that did work out.
Yes, you know? And I was going to start by saying that we're going back through the John Robinson stuff because I think it's the most compelling thing to see if you can get some perspective, however limited he is and what he can say. But I still think you can tell with the tone and the emotion that goes into the answer, he knows as well as everybody listening that those were the defining moments. But at the same time, he won 61% of his games when he was the GM of the Titans. That's hard to do. But the three drafts, 20, 21, and 22, is what derailed him ultimately. But we should point out that they won a lot of games in 2020 and 2021 without anything from their first-round picks.
Yeah.
They didn't make a first-round pick in 2020 or 2021, and they still won the division both times and got the number one seed in 2021. So they were doing a lot of other good things, or they had done some other good things to build the roster to that point. It's just a shame that they couldn't sustain it any better than that. But he did say something that I thought was interesting, and that was, he said, I don't want to make an excuse, but it was the shutdown, right? And it did affect how you would evaluate your prospects. It was the same for everybody, but it's just amazing how south that went. It's one thing for a guy to not be as good as you thought he was going to be, you know, a first-round pick. But for him to essentially never get on the field was astounding. Astounding. And you can tell he's still shocked by it, still scarred by it.
Yeah,
he talked about Joe wielding the knife.
It's unfortunate that is, you know, the case. But, you know, you run into things like that, I think, as a GM. And what sort of magnifies it or what doesn't help is the circumstance which you were under during – while picking that guy. And again, it's not, I don't, because when a question is asked, all you're doing is giving answers. You can just flat out say, yeah, I drafted him. I should have, but there's no nuances in there. Yeah, we know you drafted him. We know you shouldn't have now, but why did you? And what made it difficult? Well, COVID made it difficult. We drafted him because we saw some things there the previous season. And because we were not able to attain all the information that we would usually have, we made a decision based on the information we had in front of us.
I would have loved to have known what the tactics were that the Titans used that year compared to what everybody else decided. You could never have gone back and said, well, this is what we did in 2010 or the last time we had a pandemic. Nobody had ever lived through a pandemic.
No.
And it was so new at the time. And the draft was, you know, still the draft was pretty close to happening. So you had to make some quick decisions. And I do wonder with the limitations that you had and you had to be creative of how you would try to continue to do the best evaluating you could under the circumstances. And I just wonder how their process was compared to other teams that maybe ended up having success. I wonder what teams that made successful picks in 2020 would look back on and say, this is what I think we did right when we had to make tricky decisions that nobody had ever had to deal with before. So really compelling stuff from John Robinson. We certainly appreciate him coming on our station. Great job by Chase and Big Joe to get him to talk about that. When we come back, we're going to talk to Joe Rexroad. We'll get his thoughts on some of these topics we've hit today as we've gone back in through the what if. We've also got a ton of texts on some of the things that we have been tossing around today. We've got some passionate listeners, which we appreciate. So we've got the third hour coming here on DVD. This is 102.5 The Game. And don't forget, Souls for Souls is sponsoring a promotion we've got going right now, which is Souls for the 615. Help a child in Middle Tennessee step into the new school year with confidence by donating $20 for a new pair of athletic shoes. And so this is the goal. Souls for Souls is sponsored by... Here's how you do it. Let me just get this important information out there. To get the info and donate the $20 for a new pair of athletic shoes for a youngster, visit thegamenashville.com/shoes. Souls for the 615 is what it's called. It's sponsored by Macero and 12 South. Go check them out for handcrafted cocktails, bold plates, happy hour, and elevated hospitality.